back to left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Let's get another week underway. A little voice crack to get it going. How we doing? It is Monday, March 3rd. Welcome to March. Steinberg Vickers from the Groundworks Downtown Studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. We got a busy hour coming your way. Hi, Vic. Happy Monday. Welcome to another week.
Just when you thought you could get rid of me.
Yeah.
I'm back for back-to-backs. Look out.
He's back. Welcome to Trade Deadline Week. The final countdown is on. Here we are on Monday, March 3rd. Friday, March 7th, 1 p.m. Calgary time, 2025 NHL Trade Deadline. And obviously in this market, we're talking mostly about what the Flames are going to do, might not do, should not do, so on and so forth. Are they making additions? Are they standing pat? Is there any way they sell between now and 1 p.m. on Friday? Let's dive in. Text lines open at 960-960. Your thoughts and questions. We'll spend a good, we'll leave a good chunk of time at the end of the segment so we can get into some texts before we hit the roundtable with Wilsey. One thing we've been saying for a while, Vix, and you know, I don't think this has changed or is going to change in the next few days, but trading the important veterans on this team with where this group is right now, with what they've accomplished through almost three quarters of a season, is not in the cards. And the Flames have been, geez, you know, I remember you and I sitting in Penticton at the South Okanagan Event Center in
September. Really came together.
I remember Craig Conroy sitting down with us and talking about, hey, like, I've told teams that these guys aren't, like, we're not trading Kadri, we're not trading Huberdeau, we're not trading Backlund and the other three, Rasmus Anderson, Blake Coleman, Mackenzie Weegar. We're not trading these guys. These guys are the core six that are going to really help us get from point A to point B. That message was being delivered by the general manager from day one of a rookie training camp in BC, and that message remains the case. Here we are on March 3rd, and I don't think that's going to be changing in the next two games. And one thing I've really gotten on board with over the last little bit is the whole idea of just because certain players don't get dealt between now and the trade deadline doesn't mean that this team isn't going to continue to get younger and isn't going to continue to make decisions based on their bigger picture. But right now, they're sitting in a playoff spot. Right now, by virtue of the tiebreaker, they would be in the playoffs if they were to start today. And I understand they don't, and they still have 22 games to play, and a lot could happen. But with Rasmus Anderson, I don't think that between now and August, what you're going to get for him goes down. In fact, I think you can make a pretty salient argument that if you wait until the offseason, you might be able to get more for a guy like Rasmus Anderson with more teams involved, especially for a guy who could be as good a trade chip as he is if it ends up going that way. And at least by doing that and waiting until the offseason, you give yourself an opportunity to figure out exactly what contract negotiations might look like. And I think you could make the same argument for a lot of players on this team that I know a lot of people are hoping get dealt. This was, I'll play this clip and then let's dive in, Vix. This is Elliot Friedman on the latest 32 Thoughts. Elliot and Kyle, available wherever you get your podcast. It came out on Monday morning and they go through all 32 teams ahead of the trade deadline. It's a marathon 32 Thoughts. And this was Elliot Friedman on Calgary's deadline approach with specifically some of their veterans.
Now, I've had some people say to me, you know, hey, look at the prices right now. Look at what teams are getting in return for some of these trades. They've got to move these guys. I don't think those prices necessarily are going to be coming down in the summer. I think Calgary, if they want to, you know, people who like Rasmus Anderson, I don't know that they're going to like him any less in the summer, as long as he continues to play well. I think the same thing goes for Kadri. I think the same thing goes for some of these other players. If you want to revisit it in the summer, I think you're still going to have interest for these guys. Unless Calgary gets absolutely blown out of the water, I can't see Conroy changing his mind.
So that is Elliot Friedman on the latest 32 Thoughts. Honestly, when it comes to players that are that important for a team that 5-4 days from the trade deadline are in a playoff spot, I think that approach makes sense. Play the rest of the season out and then see where you are. Then you can start to make some of these more significant decisions. But you're in a playoff spot right now. I don't know. I don't mind that line of thinking. If you're going to, and who knows if they're going to, but if you're going to be wanting to make a significant deal for one of these guys, or if you're not able to come to an agreement on Rasmus Anderson, I really do believe waiting until the summer makes a ton of sense here.
Yeah, it was good listening to Elliot there, because it kind of lines up with the notes that I have. And if I'm in the chair, if it's me calling the shots, I'd listen, but I'm not shopping. If you want to come blow my doors off, I'd have to listen. But I don't think that the value in the summer, like Elliot said, is much different than the value would be today. The only exception, I will disagree with you somewhat on Rasmus Anderson, only because if you were to acquire him Monday, March 3rd or Tuesday, March 4th, so on and so forth, you'd get two playoff runs out of him as opposed to one. Now, at the same time, you could be looking at a larger pool of teams to compete against each other in acquiring his services in the offseason. And from a Flames-specific approach, wouldn't you want to get closer to that July 1 and figure out exactly what it would take to retain him on a long-term deal, get the numbers out of the way, and pave yourself, or paint yourself, I should say, a better picture of what this all might look like from a Flames perspective. But yeah, there's no reason to not listen, but you're not actively out there going, hey, what would you give me for this guy? What would you give me for that guy? Because that's, one, that's not the messaging we've heard from, as you mentioned, day one in Penticton at the rookie tournament, until every recent clip, quote, whatever it happens to be, story, interview we've seen from Conroy. I think it's going to be quite quiet on that front for the Calgary Flames. I don't think the expectation is a vet's going to go out the door, nor should it, especially when you take into consideration the fact that, yes, by tiebreaker, they hold the second wild card into the Stanley Cup playoffs from the Western Conference. So in a sense, you also owe the group that you have right now. You don't necessarily need to go out and add to reward them, but you don't need to punish them for giving you probably more than what you'd expect they'd be through 60 games this season.
Yeah, the more I think about it, the more I really wonder if just standing pat, or generally standing pat, is the best way to go. It's a you can sell that as a message to the locker room that says, hey, we believe in this group. Obviously, we're not going to go add. We're not fighting for top spots. So we're not going to go bulk up, but we're also not subtracting because we believe in this group. I think you can sell that message to them.
Well, I guess what I'd be concerned about, if I'm in the chair, is the reverse of the messaging. Say you deal one of your core six at the deadline. That is not necessarily a full-on throwing in of the towel, but you're significantly making your team weaker as it's trying to push for the playoffs. If you're one of those other five vets still on the team, does that change what you want to be in the offseason? Do you still want to be a member of the Calgary Flames if you're making a playoff push and they take one of your biggest pieces out of the lineup for a futures deal? To me, that might trigger the slide from a retool to a full-on rebuild, because if I'm one of those other five vets and I see one of my guys go out the door, it becomes very real what we're actually looking at.
Yeah. And on the Anderson front, the point that you bring up, I do want, because I agree that the ability to maybe get a guy for this playoff run and next year is definitely attractive, and I think would be something that a lot of teams are interested in. I also think that could be counteracted if you're talking about what a guy's value is. If there's three teams interested in March and 11 teams interested in July, I think maybe you could be talking about things being pretty similar in terms of what type of deal you're going to be able to strike.
Yeah, and I won't disagree with that, because almost assuredly that pool, that group, whether you're retaining or not, is going to be bigger in the summer when everybody just has more flexibility. That's not to say, again, that's not to say the Flames couldn't retain at the deadline, but at the same time, you might not need to in the summer, and you're saving actual dollars as well. I'm not super concerned with the actual dollars. It doesn't come out of my bank account. I'm fine however they want to spend it. But just from a management perspective, if you're working with a cap and a dollars in, dollars out figure, that might be interesting as well.
One other point from Elliot Friedman before we dive in on the text line at 960-960. Welcome to Trade Deadline Week on Flames Talk. This was Elliot on a couple of other things to watch. And I think we've talked about both of these things, especially the first one, a few times on this program, but always adds a little more weight when Elliot says it. This was Elliot on a few other things to watch on 32 Thoughts.
I think they're trying to find a place for Miromanov. You know, he's not really playing. He's still pretty young guy, wants to play. I think that they probably try to find somewhere for him. And I'll say this. I think if there's a player on their team who other teams will look at, it is Joel Hanley. You know, he's a really solid player. He doesn't cost a lot of money. He's a good depth guy. But I could see the Flames saying, nope, you know, we like this. We're happy with this player. We're still in it.
Okay, so here's my understanding. Go and listen to the entire 32 Thoughts with Elliot and Kyle. They go through all 32 teams and their trade deadline. The Flames section is just over about 9 minutes in, so pretty early on. But here's what I understand on Miromanov. This is kind of my understanding and where I've been on him for a little bit. I think that they've been of that mindset in terms of thinking about moving him or looking for a spot for him for quite some time. I think things changed a few months into the season for a couple of different reasons. First of all, Miromanov hasn't been playing very well. And so despite getting plenty of top 4 minutes, plenty of runs with Uyghur in the first half of the season, wasn't really able to solidify his spot. That's one. And then the reason he was brought in, he's kind of become redundant in a little way, in some ways anyway, because of what they've done over the last year. So he was brought in after they acquired Brustevich from Vancouver, but they've also drafted Parekh and Muse. So that's now three more offensively minded or offensive high-end right shot defensemen that have been added to the organization. Two of them since they acquired Miromanov just over a year ago. And so you couple Miromanov not really living up to expectations, not really giving them what they're looking for in terms of his offense translating at the highest level, not excelling defensively, and you've got Parekh, who just became the second OHL defenseman ever to score back-to-back 30-goal seasons. He might get to 100 points this year. You've got Muse lighting it up in Sudbury. You've got Brustevich, who's learning the ropes in the American League. So I think they look at him and say, you know, maybe what we brought, why we targeted Miromanov in the Hanifin trade, maybe there's not a great spot for him in the organization anymore. So I think they've kind of been looking and seeing options on and looking for options on Miromanov for a couple of months now. And obviously nothing has come to pass, and I'm not sure there will be anything that comes to pass between now and the deadline, but it makes sense. It stands to reason, and we've talked about that a few times before, about how his spot in the organization maybe not as natural a fit anymore.
Well, to be perfectly honest, he's essentially lost a top six role in Calgary, so even if you want to look at it from the Flames' perspective specifically, not even taking into consideration what they might have coming over the next couple of years, he's in a bit of a precarious situation. I understand the excitement when they brought him in from Vegas, and the underlying metrics with that pairing with Mackenzie Uyghur at the tail end of last year was very promising, and he'd have a full summer of training. Remember, summer of 2023 underwent knee surgery, and that's typically a one-year sort of calendar recovery. So I can get behind the reasoning why there might be some optimism to see if this guy can be a top four or a top six defenseman in your organization now that he's that far removed from the injury. But the fact of the matter is he just doesn't look great when he's in the lineup. And he's an offensive defenseman. Nobody's going to mistake him for a stay-at-home guy. But when you're an offensive defenseman and you're not being used on the power play even, That to me is not necessarily a kiss of death, but it's a major red flag as to where you are, or how you're supposed to fit in the lineup, knowing your skill set, knowing what the expectation somewhat is, and you're not able to earn those opportunities. I would wonder what the market is on Miramanov, to be honest with you. I don't know if it's significant. I don't know if there's a team that's looking to make a long playoff run that wants an additional right shot defenseman for significant depth. But he would be one that if you could find a match, I think you'd be okay getting any sort of return for him.
The other name mentioned there was Hanley. I think here's what I believe the thought process would be on Hanley. I do think they'd be open to moving him if the deal was good enough. But I think they're gonna have to. I think they're gonna have to be in a spot where it's like, okay, well that's just like more than we'd ever thought we would have got for this guy. So let's move him. Otherwise, I think they're quite happy to keep him as a pretty important piece on that blue line. He's been one of the most unexpected important stories of the season. Yeah. And I think they'd be fine to shake hands and go in different directions at the end of the season. But if they, I do think if they get enough of an offer, and if they get something that, you know, a team's really, really interested in bringing this guy in, and they think that his depth could help them go deep in the playoffs, I think the Flames would make the deal then, but otherwise, I think they're okay just rolling past the deadline with Hanley and likely saying goodbye at the end of the season.
So when we were brainstorming for the segment, and you're like, well, okay, well, let's talk trade deadline. I wrote down, you know, at this point, I would move anything I could in terms of depth defenseman. Pahal's excluded from that. I don't consider him to be a depth defenseman. He's an everydayer for me. Mm-hmm. And so that would include Miramanov, you know, Barry, even though he's with the Wranglers. And so I'd listen on Hanley. With that, though, I know what his value is to my side. If I'm in that chair, if I'm calling the shots, I know what his value is to the Calgary Flames right now. And it would have to be an overpay to pry him from me. And I don't know if there's necessarily an overpay out there for Joel Hanley. But I had who would have imagined 4 months ago saying that? You have to overpay to get Hanley from me. He was number 8 in September on the depth chart. And now he's... I'm not saying he's a top 4 defenseman, but he's playing top 4 minutes for the Flames and has, to a degree, been a stabilizer for that decor. And I, again, 4 months ago, 3 months, like, I couldn't imagine saying that. So good on him.
Let's get to the text line. Spend the rest of the segment on the text line at 960-960. It's trade deadline week. We'll spend a lot of time on the text line because lots of questions, lots of comments, lots of things will come from there. This is from Danny in Calgary. It says, Kadri isn't part of the future, and they have enough leaders. Kadri, Zeri, and a second for Bowen Byram and Dylan Cousins. I'm not sure that that's a deal that is realistic. I mean, we can throw... That's one of my favorite things is like every once in a while, a couple callers, George has done it before, Travis has done it before. It's like, well, why didn't they just make this trade? What trade? Well, they should have just made these two players for this guy. What do you mean they should have just, what? You can't just like throw a trade out.
Video game mode.
You can't just throw a trade out and then be mad that the general manager didn't make that exact trade that you suggested. I don't know if the Flames have the type of assets to be bringing in one of, let alone both of Bowen, Byram, and Dylan Cousins at this point, especially if we're talking about in the next 5 days. I'm not saying it wouldn't be awesome, and I'm not suggesting the Flames would shut the door if there was a deal on the table. I just don't know how realistic that is.
I guess from my perspective, if like we've heard Cousins linked to the Flames for months now, in terms of there's interest, yes, or what have you, if it hasn't happened by now, I'm not certain it's going to materialize over the course of the next 96 hours to beat the deadline.
Yep. Yeah. And that type of deal seems like an off-season deal as well.
I'll push back on that slightly only because it felt like a Frost Farabee deal was an off-season deal. Like there, you do get those pockets of actual NHL.
And I don't want to be, I don't. And the only reason I say off-season is because with no disrespect to Frost and Farabee, like those are, I mean, Bowen Byram's a potential.
Oh, if we're talking about both of those guys in a deal, yeah, that's
and just the caliber of the player they are. It's just, I don't know, those types of deals, those type of significant deals. And again, I'm not suggesting that Frost and Farabee aren't significant. They're not in the same level, age range, and upside.
Well, and
everything like both Byram and Cousins would be.
And in all fairness, the Frost-Farabee deal cost you an unrestricted free agent. You weren't resigning a guy you put on waivers at the beginning of the year and a second round pick.
Yeah.
There was an additional later pick pushed way as far out as you can, if I'm remembering right. But
as far as I understand, that was what pushed the deal over the
the finish line.
Breer was like, hey, we need, we
was
need
it a seventh in 2028?
Something like that. Yeah.
We need a sweetener.
I just like one more thing. Yeah. I just need one more thing. Okay, we'll give you a seventh round pick in 2072. How's that?
Hey, got it done.
This reads, draft position this year is a more important commodity than whatever extra you may get from dealing them in the summer. Top 10 pick versus bottom of the first round is a huge gulf. Trade some of these guys now. You say they're in a playoff spot, but they're also 2 points out of the lottery. Granted, I understand that, and that's a fair point, but I find it, like, we talked at the beginning of the segment about how transparent Conroy's been, right? And one of the other things Conroy has been transparent about is not losing on purpose and not putting the team in a position where, you know, finishing towards the bottom of the league is the goal. And so trading away those guys just because it might give you a better chance of finishing in the bottom 10, while I understand the concept and the theory, it kind of goes against what Craig Conroy has been messaging from the get-go as well. We want to build while staying competitive. And I know that there are lots of people who vehemently disagree with that idea and the potential success of that idea. But I am saying that is kind of against how Conroy has been messaging this thing all along.
Which is, losing isn't acceptable. At the end of the day, this Calgary Flames team...
Or being okay with losing.
Being okay with losing isn't acceptable, yeah.
And Texter's right. The Flames at 65 points, they're 2 points out of not transferring their pick. Because right now the Flames are 16th. There are 2 points separating them from 23rd.
Tight race any which way you want to look at it.
Sure is. What else we got here at 960. This reads, trading those guys now at least gives them a chance of finishing low enough in the standings to keep their first round pick. It's so frustrating to watch this team continue to be managed with these decisions that just solidify their mediocrity for longer. Same idea as the last text. Our buddy Dylan in Revy says, I'd love if they sell. I doubt they do, though. Curious about the Carlo rumor. Yes, he's huge and has 2 years left at 4.1 that expires when he's 31, so it kind of makes sense. But what doesn't make sense is that he's a right-handed shot and has zero offense to his game. The only way it makes sense if you're trading Anderson. Your thoughts? That's from Dylan. Yeah, I don't, on the surface, not quite sure I get the whole idea. I did see the rumor out there for Carlo. Not sure I fully get that. Just on the surface, in a vacuum, Carlo and the Flames, just as an addition, doesn't seem to make a ton of sense to me. Right shot, 28. But if it were to have more context, maybe it could start to make a little more sense.
I mean, if it was Mason Laura, I would get real behind it. But it doesn't, again, yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. A 28-year-old right shot, I mean, 6'5", 220. Kind of a stay-at-home stabilizing type. But like, even if the Flames were to move Rasmus Anderson, I wouldn't encourage them to go out and get Brandon Carlo.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think one is necessarily a result of the other, nor would I actively go out and try to replace Rasmus Anderson this season, especially with somebody that doesn't profile anything like him. So I would, and I don't know what the asking price on Carlo is, but I imagine it's significant enough that it's like, why would you take an asset if you were to deal Rasmus Anderson and flip it to Boston for a 28-year-old defenseman?
This says, boys, I've been waiting years now for the Flames to acquire some elite talent at any position. Standing pat, waiting till the summer, yada, yada. It's time for the Flames to be bold and do something. That comes from Ken. I just don't know. Like, those deals happen rarely at the deadline. The type of deals that are what Ken is referencing happen rarely at this stage of a season.
Unless he's hoping the three vets get dealt and that's bold and they bring in first round picks for each, and then all of a sudden you've lined up with what, four, five? Well, I guess it would be four first rounders in the 2025 draft. But I mean, that would be bold. But I don't know if he's talking about that or if he's going out and saying, hey, give up 9 players and 18 draft picks for Connor McDavid. Like,
yeah, go
both,
do that.
Both would be bold.
Conroy, what are you doing? This says, so if the goal is to make the playoffs this year, just like it is every year with this organization, then why not add at the deadline? Is it because they want to retain their draft assets? Which is crazy, because if they want to do that, then why not trade some sought-after veterans to gain more? Just seems like an aimless direction right now. And what I'd say to that is, I don't think it is aimless, because it's been pretty well articulated in that they want to get younger over the next 3 to 5 years. They want to restock. They want to bring in some higher-end young talent over the next little while, which they started at they started it at last year's deadline when they made all those deals from Lindholm to the rest of them, continued with their 10 picks at the draft in Vegas. And they've said, hey, we want to get younger and continue to affect this process of getting younger over a 3 to 5 year span, but also going to let the chips fall where they may. And so the chips have fallen this year that just under three quarters of the way through the season, they're holding down a playoff spot. And so they're not going to deviate from their plan and go and add a bunch of big time rentals, because that would be silly with what they're trying to do. But also, I don't think it is aimless to be like, well, we're here, let's not sell off the important players we have at this deadline. Let's reevaluate where things are in the summertime.
The other thing to keep in mind, too, is, and it's blasphemous for me of all people to say this, but sometimes too many draft picks is too many. Like, the Flames had 10 in 2024. As it stands now, they've got 7 this year and 9 in 2026. At some point, your organization has too many prospects. That sounds counterproductive to a rebuild or a retool, but you have limited resources. You have limited roster space once they turn pro. Sometimes, and I think Utah is a good example of this, where last offseason, maybe the offseason before, they pivoted from, we want futures in our trades, to we want immediate players, immediate help now. One, because they want to be more competitive in the short term, but two, with an eye on the fact that, hey, if you draft 10 to 12 times every year, you're going to get a backlog, and that doesn't benefit anything.
Jim in the Southwest says, I'm curious what Mr. Vickers thinks about the top 5 to 10 picks in this year's draft. From my perspective, seems a lot weaker compared after the top few than last year. Fans really want these guys, but outside of Misa or Schaefer, are we confident of a franchise player there?
Well, I wouldn't be sleeping on James Haggins as well, the American at Boston College. He's in that mix for number one. Porter Martone was for the longest time as well. He's a winger, though, and wouldn't necessarily address anything from a Calgary perspective, but he's come off a little bit. I know there's a couple of Swedes in Eklund and Frondell that have taken a next step. Roger McQueen hasn't played in 4 months. He's a bit of a wild card there, too. Desnoyers is a guy that you're going to win a Stanley Cup. I don't know what team's going to draft him. He might not necessarily be a number one center on that team, but it would shock me if he never won a cup just with the way and the style that he plays. I'll agree that once you get past maybe 8, there's a lot of question marks that start to hit. But again, if you're in the top 10, but you're outside of that top 3 even, you're going to get a player you're very happy with.
Andrew writes, guys, do you think Conroy uses any of their cap space to facilitate trades for other teams? That's Andrew in Hidden Valley. And similar, Josh and Airdrie, with their current plan in mind, all I can see them doing, if they're smart, is being a third-party team to broker a deal and use their cap this year to pick up a pick or two. I could see them doing that. I could also see them helping a team in the next few days, bringing in a player that might be able to play for them right now, but also has a contract that, you know, the Flames can easily absorb, but maybe helps another team go and chase a bigger fish or give them a little bit more cap room. I could see them doing one of those two things for sure, using their cap space as an advantage and trying to gain some more assets that way.
Yeah, if there's a deal out there where you need to be a broker or a third party, or you just need to absorb a contract, especially if that guy can fit in your top 6 or your top 12 forwards, absolutely go out there and do that. That is what weaponizing your cap space is. Kind of different scenarios or situations, but if you can find a deal where you get an asset in return for helping out somebody, take that asset and run.
Finally, from Cole, I just want to see them be a cap broker for some decent picks. There's still a chance for my bold prediction from the beginning of the season to come true. Exciting, meaningful hockey until the end, when they follow the playoffs and get a lotto pick to move up and keep their own first rounder. There you go on the text line at 960-960. If we didn't get to yours, apologies. Lots of texts on that. Welcome to Trade Deadline Week. I'm guessing we'll speak more about the trade deadline between now and the deadline Friday at 1 o'clock. I feel like, yeah, safe hunch.
Good call.
Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg. This hour of Flames Talk underway. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks. You know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And now a Monday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. It's Steinberg along with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. And now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Monday Daily Flames Roundtable. All right, gents. It has it's been a low scoring trip for the Flames. It's been a low scoring last three games. They've got one goal in their last three games. Almost about 20 minutes away from setting a new franchise record for longest goalless drought. And so at last check, gentlemen, the Flames are tied for the lowest scoring team in the NHL, tied with Anaheim at 31st overall, and they are the lowest scoring team at 5-on-5 in the NHL. Gents, I mean, I think we knew coming into the season scoring was not going to be their strong suit, and we had the conversation in the first half of the season about how many games in a row they went without scoring more than three. But at any point did we expect it to be here? At any point did we expect them to be right at the bottom of the league in overall and 5-on-5 scoring?
I definitely didn't. I didn't think they would be a top half of the league team as far as goals for, but I didn't think they'd be at the bottom of the NHL in that category. Not even close. I thought they would be maybe in the 15 to 20 range. But that has not been the case. I really think one of the reasons why is that they're really focused on being good defensively. And we've heard Rasmus Anderson talk about it. You know, here's a guy who has put up 50 points in this league and got off to a really strong start offensively this season. And then, you know, the goals and the points have dried up for the most part, but I've personally asked him about it on a number of occasions, and he's said that he's really focused on being strong defensively, and that's probably hurt him offensively a little bit. And I'm guessing that he's not the only one. And small picture, yeah, it's tough. It's tough to win when you don't score a goal. They didn't score a goal in either game played in the state of Florida last week. And it's tough to score when you score one goal, which is what they've averaged in the first four games of this season-long six-game road trip. But because they're so good in goal, and they've been great between the pipes on this trip, and because they're so good defensively on most nights, that's kept them in a lot of hockey games and helped them win more games than they've lost, at least in regulation time this season. So I do think that there is more there offensively, but you look at the evolution of Jonathan Huberdeau, and you know he's gone from a guy who played for a Panthers team that tried to win 6-5 every night, and as a result, he put up 115 points in his final season with them, to a guy who's had to evolve and become a better 200-foot player, you know, still leads the team in goals and points, but isn't going to get close to 115 or to 100 and isn't even a point per game guy, but he is certainly better without the puck and defensively than he's been at any point in time in his career. So yeah, I'm surprised. And you know, the truth is, and I said this before the Four Nations break, and I think I've said it a couple of times after the break, the Flames are going to have to do more offensively if they're going to make the playoffs. I know they're in a playoff spot right now, but I still feel pretty strongly about that, guys.
I did not expect offensive issues to get this extreme. And Willsey, my range was pretty similar to yours. I was expecting them to be somewhere between 17 and 24. Well, literally no team has averaged fewer. Last season, 3.09 goals for per game. This year, 2.53. Over half a goal per game fewer. And I get it. The system's a little different. The personnel's a little different. We know that there was a roster overhaul over the course of the 2023-24 season. But that's a significant drop, and we're seeing it translate into other areas. Their high dangers at 5-on-5 are down a goal or one chance per game. Basically, across the board, their volume in terms of shots are down. Like, you name it, the category is down. It's fewer. And it's at certain elements are baffling, and certain elements you can kind of be like, okay. And we all know how many players had career years last year for the Flames. Their career years for a season, typically you don't go year in, year out replicating them and still call them a career year. But I just thought with the depth that the Calgary Flames had, particularly up front, the additions of Frost and Farabee, we would see more. It doesn't necessarily mean you need a point per game player on each line, but it felt like the Flames were lined up to be able to roll at least three lines. We've seen four at times over the course of coming out of the Four Nations break, but a different line could step up each and every night and sort of try to keep the Flames afloat. We haven't necessarily seen that with the additions of Frost and Farabee up until this point. I don't necessarily know for sure what the answer is, but to circle back to the initial question, I did not imagine coming into the season that scoring would be so hard done by the Flames.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty extreme, guys. I mean, I went and did a little research. I think there's been like three teams over the last decade, four teams maybe over the last decade that have been bottom five in the NHL in goals per game and have still made the playoffs. So like if the Flames end up making it and they're probably not going to finish any higher than 28th, 29th, even if they do have a little bit of an uptick here. If they end up making the playoffs, like it's a pretty significant accomplishment because usually the teams at 31 and 32 in terms of goals per game are fighting for number one overall. So like what the Flames are doing here is pretty against the script to be scoring as little as they are and still being in a playoff spot approaching the three-quarter mark of the season. Last year is one of those years. Washington was 28th and made the playoffs last year. And promptly got blown out in round number one, as we know. But it's pretty remarkable that the Flames have been able to keep themselves in this playoff mix by scoring as little as they do. And honestly, I don't know if has there really been an improvement? This has been what they are. We're 60 games in, guys. This is what they are. And I mean, could they have a slight uptick? I guess. But I mean, Kadri's producing. Huberdeau's having his best year as a member of the Flames. We know there are some other names like Sharangovich and others who have had down years. Frost and Farabee have not been the instant offensive fits that some had hoped. But I kind of feel like, hey, we're 60 games in. This is kind of what they are. I didn't expect them to have this much difficulty scoring goals. And it's obviously been exacerbated and highlighted by the last three games through the Southeast U.S. But no, long story short, I was not expecting this. I knew that scoring was not going to be their strong suit. I knew they weren't going to be Tampa Bay or Edmonton or something like that. But I also wasn't expecting this either. Like 31st, 32nd overall, that's pretty extreme. So what they've been able to do and how competitive they've been able to remain is pretty impressive on the other side of that sword.
It is. And Andre Kuzmenko was having a horrible year. So that was part of it before he got traded to this city. And I hate to say it, but Yegor Sharangovich, whose contract extension hasn't even kicked in, is having a really tough time putting the puck in his opponent's net or setting up one of his teammates to do that. And that's why he was a healthy scratch for the first time this season in game four of this season-long six-game road trip. And, you know, don't forget, guys, he broke NHL records for most goals and points by a Belarusian in a season last year. You know, he was a really good player for the Flames, and he just hasn't been the same guy. And, you know, Ryan Huska sent him a pretty clear message on Sunday afternoon when the team was in Carolina playing the Hurricanes, and he was a healthy scratch, that, you know, it's not good enough. They need more from him moving forward. The other things that give me some hope heading down the stretch here, Connor Zary does not look like the same player coming back from that injury that he did before that knee injury. He doesn't look as explosive. He doesn't look as dynamic. You miss 15 games and then you tack 2 weeks on top of that because of the Four Nations break. That's a long absence. So if Connor Zary can find his game again, that'll help the Flames add another scoring line. And then you talked about the two new additions, Aaron.
Yep.
Joel Farabee and Morgan Frost. And I thought we saw some pretty good things from them early in their tenure with the Flames. But I think they both struggled in the last little while here. So if they could get more comfortable and start to chip in offensively, you know, there's three or four guys right there who could help the Flames climb out of the basement as far as goals for per game goes, and make it a lot easier on the goaltenders, who have been, as I said earlier, fantastic, and just on the team as a whole. They have to be so good defensively, you know, trying to win games 1-0, 2-1, 3-2. It just doesn't leave a lot of room for error.
I know these other teams I'm about to mention will play a different style and there's lower expectations, but the fact of the matter is the Flames are being outscored by teams like the San Jose Sharks, the Chicago Blackhawks, and the New York Islanders. And I can't say I had that on my radar coming into the season. And then just to layer in a little bit more context, Kadri and Huberto are each tied for 88th in NHL scoring. Flames don't have a guy in the top 75 in scoring right now.
Yeah.
Here's the other crazy thing, guys. The power play was horrible for most of last season. It's been a lot better this season, and the goals for are still down.
Yeah, which is why it's 32nd overall at 5-on-5 is
opposed to tied for 31st.
The power play, true, but the power play has been, and I know that it's taken a bit of a dip. Scored a huge goal, obviously Sunday, to scratch out a point in a game they were pretty thoroughly outplayed in again. But the power play, Wilsey, for a good chunk of this season has been really huge for him. And it's been a long time, probably since the 21-22 season, where I could sit here and not chuckle and say, geez, the power play is helping him win games or helping him stay in games. It's been a while since we've been able to say that. It hasn't been as good on this trip, but it definitely, for the course of the season, has taken a significant step from where it was last year, hey?
Oh, big time. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like they're scoring a bunch of garbage time power play goals either. Like last season, when they needed a power play goal, they could never get one. And sometimes they would score one when it didn't matter anymore. But this season, you talked about yesterday's game in Raleigh. They needed a power play goal and got one. It's like the power play has been clutch this season. They've scored a lot of big goals at important times in games. So, hey, you can't fault the PP for their scoring struggles right now.
It's our Daily Flames roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. You know, goaltending's been good for them all season, guys, but how good has goaltending been on this trip specifically? Just a thought on how good both goaltenders have been on these four games or in these four games.
Yeah, they've been brilliant. I'm sure one of you or maybe both of you have the numbers in front of you, but in my opinion, if your goaltender gives up two or fewer, he is absolutely doing his job and giving you a chance to win. And I think about Jordan Binnington during the Four Nations faceoff. Yeah, he'd give up a bad one, but he still put Canada in a position to win every single game that they played in. So I think about how good Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf have been on this trip. I mean, you go back to game one of the trip, you go to Washington to play the highest scoring team in the National Hockey League, a Capitals club that had an 8-game point streak, a 16-game home point streak, and he was brilliant and allows just one goal. The Flames score a couple of goals in the first period, and that turned out to be enough in a 3-1 win. You fast forward to games 2 and 3 of the trip, and they got no goal support. Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar did not get any help. And I think that you could argue that Wolf was the Flames' best player in that the 3-0 loss to the Lightning. The team wasn't bad in that game, just couldn't put a puck past Andre Vasilevsky. And I think there's no doubt that Dan Vladar was the best player for the Flames in their 3-0 loss to the Panthers, and they hardly tested Sergei Bobrovsky in that one. And then in the last game, I thought Dustin Wolf was excellent again and certainly put his team in a position to pick up a really important point in that 2-1 loss to the Hurricanes. And, you know, if that game doesn't get to overtime, the Flames aren't sitting in the Stanley Cup playoff spot right now. So, you know, a clutch performance by Dustin Wolf on Sunday afternoon in Raleigh. So I would argue the Flames' two goaltenders, who have two starts apiece to get this trip going, have been their best players four games into season-long six-game trip.
You're not wrong on that one. You will get 100% endorsement out of me on that. And here are the numbers, Wilsey. Dan Vladar in his two starts at 2.00 goals against and a .942 save percentage. Dustin Wolf in his two starts at 1.95 goals against and a .926 save percentage. Probably, for my money, the best four-game stretch Calgary goaltenders have had this season. There was a four-game run early in the season, games 3 through 6 on the calendar, where they allowed 7 goals against total, which would probably give a run for the money. But considering these opponents, considering the time of year, considering what's on the line in terms of jockeying for position, the wild card standings, this has been the best four-game stretch I've seen out of Flames goaltenders this year. And it's rough. It's disappointing to consider the fact that they've come away with 3 points in these four games, considering your collective save percentage is somewhere around 930 on this trip. Your goals against is sub two. It goes to show the first question, the first topic about goal scoring directly impacting the team when you're getting goaltending that has been absolute lights out on this stretch.
I mean, I thought Dustin Wolf was spectacular Sunday against Carolina.
He allowed two goals against, expected goals was like 3.89 or something like that. So he's nearly half that.
High dangers in that game were 21-7 Carolina, 17-3 at 5-on-5. Yep. Like, Dustin Wolf was spectacular. I thought he was very good in the Tampa Bay game as well. Got beat by one shot. The other one was a empty netter, and the other one was a fluky Mackenzie Weegar perfect redirect. Obviously, as you said, Wilsey, Vladar was spectacular against Florida. That game was like that game against Florida reminded me on like a steroids of the game in Vegas Vladar played, where he was also outstanding and the team didn't give him any run support that night in Vegas. And obviously Vladar was very good picking up the win, specifically had to be very strong in the final 40 minutes against Washington. So yeah, I mean, look, the scoring has been, they've scored four goals in four games on this trip. Scoring would be the obvious negative, but we like to be balanced here on Flames Talk. And boy, has goaltending been a massive positive. They've just been so, both guys have been so strong. And I think it's really positive that coming out of the break, Dustin Wolf has put together three consecutive quality starts, San Jose, Tampa Bay, and Carolina. And after finally picking up a win for the first time since November in his last start before the break on February 2nd against Seattle, Dan Vladar has put together two more quality starts, and he's been very good, because I think it's pretty clear with the goaltending, with the scoring issues that we just talked about, how crucial both these goaltenders are going to be if the Flames are going to hold off the three teams they're trying to hold off here.
Yeah, and with how well Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf have played on this road trip, you get the feeling that if the Flames could get to three on a regular basis, that they would win way more than they would lose down the stretch. At least that's the sense I get, because those guys have been so dialed in. And if I'm not mistaken, the Flames have won 28 straight games when scoring four or more goals. So, God, if they could get a few guys going and get to three or four on a fairly regular basis between now and the end of the regular season, with the way Wolf and Vladar are playing, I really like their chances to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs. So, hopefully, the offense comes sooner rather than later. And Ryan Huska did say after yesterday's game against the Hurricanes that every team in the league, and I would say some more than others, you know, some are more gifted offensively than the Flames are, but, you know, every team in the league at some point in time during the season goes through a stretch like this. And when we were in Tampa, I had a great chat with Lightning general manager Julien Brisebois, and he said he thought his team played some fantastic hockey during the month of February or January, and they had a hard time winning because they had a hard time scoring. The chances were there, they just weren't burying them, and that everything kind of turned for them in February and into March. Well, you know, the Flames don't have the type of players that the Lightning have, but I still think that there's more goals and points in this group of players than what we've seen lately and really over the course of the season. So yeah, if like I said, if they can get Sharon Govich going, and if the two new guys can get going in Farabee and Frost, then, and if Zeri can get back to where he was before the injury, then I like the Flames' chances to stay in this playoff race and maybe even make it when all is said and done.
All right, Wilsey, we'll do it again on Tuesday. Thank you for another strong roundtable, my friend. Be well.
It was average, but we'll talk to you tomorrow.
I thought you were strong. he's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. I thought I was average. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable, and that's going to start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk, as I'm Ali Nanji. Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour, and the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.